Beneath the headlines, behind the timelines, there is a story no one wants you to find. Welcome to Some Unapproved Thinking, where forgotten truths, buried patterns, and invisible systems rise to the surface. You weren't crazy. You were just early. Let's begin.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Some Unapproved Thinking. You know, it's hard to believe we've made it to episode 49 already. Last time, we unpacked some rather unsettling narratives surrounding the tragic deaths of musicians Chester Bennington and Chris Cornell. But today? Today, we're diving into a conversation that might challenge everything you think you know about genetics, history, and our place in the universe. Your junk DNA could actually be encrypted history. Now, that's a claim you don't hear every day, right? So, recently, scientists discovered that some of what we've called junk DNA contains patterns that actually match astronomical coordinates. Yeah, let that sink in for a second. What does that even mean? And why should we care? You're carrying 3.2 billion letters of code in every cell of your body, and most of it has been labeled junk for 60 years. That's not an oversight. That's a cover-up. In 2019, a team of geneticists at the Max Planck Institute in Leipzig were running routine genome sequencing on a batch of human samples when one of them noticed something impossible. A repeating sequence, not random noise, not evolutionary debris, a pattern. The same 47 base pair sequence appeared 1,247 times throughout the non-coding regions of human DNA, what we call introns, the spaces between genes that biology textbooks told you meant nothing. But here's what made the lab director go pale. When they cross-referenced these sequences against known astronomical data, the coordinates matched. Precisely the angle and distance between three particular star clusters visible from Earth 12,500 years ago? Not close. Exact. The research never made it past peer review. Two of the five researchers involved changed institutions within 6 months. One deleted his social media entirely. The paper exists in a preprint server that most universities don't index. You'll find it if you know where to look, but you're not supposed to. This is some unapproved thinking. Okay, quick break before we dive into this. I have to share a song I've been listening to lately. It's called Calling All Angels by Mero. It's a really emotional, kind of haunting track, but in a really subtle, beautiful way. It actually came out of a difficult time in their life, and you can feel that throughout the song. It has that feeling of reaching out or searching for something and not really knowing if anyone's listening. The sound is super immersive too, almost cinematic, but still really stripped back, which I love. Mero's just one of those artists where the voice and writing feel really raw and original, and it's cool to see it already getting attention from places like Flaunt, V Magazine, and Grammy.com. If you're into more emotional, low-key music, I think you'll really like this one. I'll link it in the show notes so you can listen. You can stream Calling All Angels by Mero on Spotify, Apple Music, or wherever you listen to music. Okay, now let's get stuck back into our DNA. This isn't about aliens. Not exactly. It's about what junk DNA actually is, why it was called junk in the first place, and what happens when you start asking the questions nobody's supposed to ask. When Watson and Crick cracked the DNA double helix in 1953, the scientific community was drunk on certainty. Every part of the genome had to have a function, every codon a purpose. But by the early 1990s, when human genome mapping accelerated, researchers hit a wall. They found that only about 1.5% of your DNA actually codes for proteins. The thing that makes you, the biological machinery that runs your body, all of that comes from 1.5%. What about the other 98.5%? The prevailing explanation was elegant and wrong. Junk DNA was evolutionary garbage, leftover code from ancestral organisms, viral insertions that didn't get cleaned out. Non-functional, repetitive sequences with no purpose except to exist. They called it selfish DNA because apparently garbage could have motives. The framework was so comfortable, so inevitable sounding, that almost nobody questioned it. But comfort is the enemy of clarity. By 2012, The ENCODE project, a massive international consortium studying DNA function, announced something that should have rewritten every biology textbook on Earth. 80% of the human genome is biochemically active. It's not junk. It's working. We just didn't know what it was doing. The press release was buried under funding announcements and grant celebrations. The implications were treated like a minor update. They weren't. If 80% of your DNA is active, then what's it doing? The official answer is still fuzzy. Regulatory sequences, structural elements, non-coding RNA synthesis, all true, all incomplete. Because here's what the research community doesn't want to admit. We don't know what most of it does. We have fragments. We have correlations. We don't have the full architecture. This is where the pattern in the Max Planck sequence becomes radioactive. Those 47 base pair repeats aren't random. They're consistent. They appear in precise mathematical intervals throughout your genome. And when you map them spatially, when you plot their positions across all 23 chromosomes, they form something that looks less like evolutionary noise and more like a message or a coordinate system, or both. The astronomical match is where the official science stops talking. The three-star clusters, the sequence references, are part of what we call the Taurus-Auriga complex, visible from Earth's northern hemisphere between October and April. But here's the thing. The angle of reference, the distance calculations embedded in the base pair intervals, they're not calibrated to the sky we see now. They're calibrated to the sky as it existed around 10,500 BCE before writing, before agriculture in most places, before recorded history. When you zoom back that far, you're in a time when, according to our textbooks, humans were hunter-gatherers with no technology, no astronomy, no capacity for the kind of precise coordinate mathematics that would be required to encode star positions into a genome sequence. And yet, here it is. The counterargument is immediate and rehearsed. It's coincidence. Humans love finding patterns. We're pattern recognition machines that evolved to see tigers in tall grass. Sometimes the grass is just grass. Sometimes 47 base pair sequences that repeat 1,247 times across human DNA are just statistical inevitability. Nothing more. Except probability doesn't work that way. The odds of a specific 47-letter sequence appearing anywhere in the human genome once are astronomical. The odds of it appearing 1,247 times in non-random distribution? A mathematician would require several degrees of confidence before even writing down the number. One of the Max Planck researchers, before he vanished from public academic life, calculated it as 1×10 to the power of 847. For context, there are only 10 to the power of 80 atoms in the observable universe. You're not looking at coincidence. You're looking at deliberate placement. So the question isn't whether it's a pattern. It's what kind of message would you hide if you wanted it to survive 12,500 years? You'd put it in the only thing that travels through time and reproduction both, DNA, not in genes that code for visible traits. Those get selected for or against. Those vanish if they're not useful. You'd hide it in the non-coding regions, the stuff nobody thought to look at, the stuff they called junk for decades. You'd hide it where it wouldn't be noticed unless someone specifically knew to look for astronomical data structures embedded in genetic sequences. You'd hide it in plain sight. But here's where the narrative fractures and becomes uncomfortable. If this is true, if there's encoded information in human DNA pointing to a specific place in the sky at a specific time in the past, then who put it there? And when? And why is it being suppressed now? The official answer is that it's not suppressed. It's that the research isn't sufficiently replicated. It's that peer review has standards for a reason. It's that extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence, and one Max Planck study isn't extraordinary evidence. It's an anomaly. But anomalies are where science happens. And this particular anomaly has been replicated quietly, in labs in Stockholm, Beijing, and even Sao Paulo. The sequences have been confirmed, the astronomical coordinates verified, but the papers exist in repositories nobody reads. The conferences where they were presented became infamous for aggressive questioning and walkouts. One researcher's grant funding was quietly redirected. Another found himself excluded from collaboration opportunities. Not blacklisted, that would be too obvious. Just professionally isolated. This is how you suppress a truth that threatens the foundation of how we understand human origins. You don't ban it. You let it exist in places where it's technically available, but functionally invisible. You make the people who work on it radioactive enough that younger researchers learn not to touch it. You wait for the initial researchers to retire or die, and then their data lives in archives nobody accesses. The real trap is this. Whether or not this is authentic, whether or not there's genuinely astronomical data encoded in your DNA, the response to even asking the question reveals something about the scientific establishment that can't be unseen. Science is supposed to be mechanism for truth, peer review, replication, falsifiability. But when anomalies emerge that threaten fundamental assumptions about human history, assumptions that underpin archaeology, anthropology, and evolutionary biology, the mechanism breaks. Not always, not everywhere, but just enough. It bends toward protecting the narrative over pursuing the truth. And the people in power know this. They built the system this way. The deeper thing is that junk DNA itself might be the greatest misdirection in modern science. By labeling 98.5% of your genome as non-functional, researchers could safely ignore it for decades. Why fund research into something that does nothing? Why create departments around waste? The budget goes to understanding the 1.5%. Instead, the infrastructure builds around that. And when data emerges that suggests the ignored section is actually the most important part, the part that carries information about where you came from, the entire institutional machine resists it. Not consciously, not through meetings and decisions, but through incentives, through career paths, and through the weight of existing models that took decades to build and that nobody wants to see dismantled. You live in a body with 3.2 billion letters of encrypted history written into every cell, and you've been told it's junk. You've been told to forget it. You've been told that human civilization started around 5,000 years ago with the Sumerians, and anything before that is prehistory, less real, less significant, and even less worth understanding. But what if the message in your DNA is telling you something different? What if the coordinates pointing to a time when official history says humans couldn't possibly have had that knowledge aren't a hoax or a coincidence or a fraud? What if they're a record, a marker left by something or someone with the technology to encode information into the very genetic code of emerging human populations? And what if every human on Earth is carrying that record unconsciously through reproduction? The horror isn't that the data might be true. Nope. The horror is that we've built institutions designed to just ignore it. The Max Planck research sits there, waiting, replicated quietly, suppressed gently. The coordinates are still in your DNA. They still point backward. They still ask, who were you before history decided to remember? Your junk DNA isn't junk. But it does appear to be a message that some don't want you to read. Tracy, out.
If this story didn't sit right with you, good. You're not here to be comforted. You're here to see what others overlook. Thanks for exploring some unapproved thinking. Learn more at someunapprovedthinking.com. New episodes drop weekly. Subscribe, share, and keep questioning, because the pattern's still playing out, and next time, we're going deeper.